Hello and welcome to Weekly Beats, the podcast in which two guys give you their perspective on the week in music. My name is Charlie.
My name is Mark.
And this week on the show, we will be talking about the latest album from Manchester Orchestra, A Black Mile to the Surface. And afterward, we'll be talking about the latest charting single on the Billboard Hot 100, which this week belongs to Charlie Puth. The song is called Attention. We'll give it our full attention in 30-second chunks on the back half of the show. We'll take some time to talk about what else we've been listening to and then call it a week. And that's the plan, okay?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
I'm sensing some tension.
How you feeling?
Honestly, I am so tired.
Why are you tired, Mark? What are you about to?
I'm not sleeping. I have not slept last night, and it got maybe 3 hours in. And now I'm just trying desperately to even, you know, keep my mind straight, let alone record a really insightful and internet famous podcast like this one.
So you just went to bed and then you were like, not for me, and just got up and decided to stay up?
No, actually I got in bed and I said, nuh-uh, and then I rolled out of it.
No. Not tonight, sleep.
No, thank you, feeling rested. I'd rather feel kind of crappy all day later.
Well, have you got a coffee or a kickstart to get you going here, bud?
Okay, well, actually, what I'm rocking right now is the Monster Energy Ultra Sunrise.
Okay. Describe the can to me. What color can are we working with here?
Okay, it's one of the zero-cal cans, of course. You're very familiar with the zero-cal cans. They got that very intricate white design where it's just like a sheer shade of a color, and then just like it's just the naked can to make the images. And
gotcha.
It's bright orange. It tastes a little bit like Flintstones vitamins. Zero calories.
So a great experience on the whole, it sounds.
Yeah, as far as the zero cal monsters go, I think this one is one of the best.
If you had to rank energy drinks, where would you put Monster in relation to the others?
Regular Monster?
Or just energy drinks in general? I mean, I don't know. Is there a big difference between the zero calorie and the regular Monster?
Oh, huge. Yeah, listen to this guy. Huge difference. Massive difference.
What's the difference?
Well, Monster tastes like something. Like, zero cal Monster, you can taste nothing but the chemicals they use to make it. It's like Diet Coke versus Coke.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
But Monster is the best of the regular energy drinks?
Well, like, I can't even believe we're getting this. Versus, like,
Red Bull
versus the Rockstar. There's, like, 18 Rockstar flavors alone that I would have to spend weeks considering and debating their placement in the canon. I mean, I just don't know if I'm ready for this right now with so little sleep. If anything, I need to be drinking all of them to even do this.
Yeah, I hear you. So you would put Rockstar below Monster.
Regular Rockstar, yes. Flavored Rockstar, probably no. They have like almost gummy worm flavored Rockstar that is very good.
Okay. And Kickstart's above them all.
Kickstart's not even really an energy drink. I mean, let's be real here. Let's be honest.
Okay. What is it?
It's just a very special elixir.
Okay. You know what else is an elixir, Mark?
No. I would love to know what else is an elixir.
Manchester Orchestra is an elixir.
How so?
I don't know. I was looking for a segue and I couldn't find one, so I went with that.
Yeah, I picked up on that, but I'm not prepared to let you lose yet. Maybe there's still something there.
I just feel like if we go with it with enough confidence, then everyone else will agree. Like, yes, they are the true elixir.
Oh man, we're getting lazy. This podcast is going down.
I'll edit this out. Okay, Andy Hall did the soundtrack for Swiss Army Man.
Yeah, true.
And we found that the elixir to life in that movie was actually just farts.
Right.
So
farts don't have calories.
Farts have zero calories. You cannot consume them.
Well,
can you? Do they actually have zero calories?
Yeah. Do you think a fart has a calorie?
Because it's like calories are, they can catch fire, right? So if it can't catch fire, it can't.
Oh, is that true?
There's like a way to measure it with fire.
I didn't know that.
You can light farts on fire.
I guess you could, yeah. I guess that's true.
So they are caloric?
I don't know.
I don't know. It's a question for the ages, man. I'll tell you what. We are into some deep science here. I'm not prepared to tackle it.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly, the thought of going through that science is practically a black mile to the surface.
Boom, there it is. Manchester Orchestra's fifth album, Black Mile to the Surface. This comes hot off the heels of their previous album, Cope, which received an acoustic accompaniment album called Hope. And the two were sort of a departure from previous forms. And even the album previous to that, which was Simple Math, also sort of a rejection of what had come previously. And so Manchester Orchestra has kind of reinvented themselves each time they've put an album out. They have never really stayed the same from track to track and disc to disc. And I think that's interesting. You know, I got to say, these are a group of guys that I have been following for quite some time now. Wouldn't say I'm a huge fan of the group, but I think Simple Math is really solid, and I was really disappointed by Cope. I think it was too one note, too coming from the same space, you know, really heavy rock songs in there, but they kind of lost their flavor after a while. Mm-hmm. And so with this one here, they had released the track The Gold ahead of the album. And as you know, Mark, it was on my top 10 tracks of the year so far. I think it's maybe the best song that they have ever written. It is emotional and moving and musically interesting. And I was hoping that that was indicative of something to come here, and that Andy Hall's time with Swiss Army Man had stretched his brain to new areas he hadn't explored previously. And I got to tell you, Mark, I really enjoy this album. I think it's really solid. I think it is, for me, unquestionably their best effort to date. It is solid front to back, thoroughly composed. These tracks interweave inside each other. Lyrics and ideas and motifs are repeated and they come back. And I'm left with just the feeling that I've experienced what I think is maybe the greatest piece of work this band could offer. Wow. I think it's really solid, man. I gotta say, I had a ton of fun with this. I think it is sonically pleasing, and I'm not sure where you might stand on it. I think you might have some criticisms, but I think it's really good.
Okay. You did that really fun thing where if you're about to say you had high expectations and they completely didn't work, like that you didn't like the album, or if it really came together, you use the same tone of voice.
I like keeping my listeners on the edge of their seats, never giving a hint one way or the other where I stand.
It's very, very ambiguous.
I hope at some point I can deliver my entire thoughts on an album, and by the end of a podcast episode, the listeners will still be confused of whether I liked it or not.
I've been confused as to why you like things or not.
Yeah. So have I. That's why this podcast exists, to help me make sense of my life.
Yeah, this is really just a study of your brain. I'm just trying to, like...
You don't even exist. You're just a figment of my imagination.
Okay, that's rude.
I'm sorry.
As a figment, I don't like having that pointed out about me.
Okay. So tell me about... Do you have any experience with Manchester Orchestra?
Oh, that would be the most amazing way to mess with you, would be to re-upload every episode of the podcast and mute my track in all the episodes so you go back to listen to any of them.
Nothing is real. What's your experience with Manchester Orchestra? Do you know these guys?
No experience.
Okay. Well, what did you think of Swiss Army Man? That we saw that film together in person. So did you love the music there? Did it tickle your fancy, or were you just kind of like, it's whatever?
You know, I remember liking it, but I also don't really remember anything about it from when we saw it.
Okay.
Which was in theaters, so that was kind of a long time ago. That's not necessarily a knock against it.
Over a year ago at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's all a cappella. There's no instruments to it. It's all just done with their voices, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. I remember there being some like gimmick to it, or some very indie kind of experiment thing happening.
Lots of callbacks to Jurassic Park theme.
Oh, I do remember that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll say what's interesting for me on a first listen to the band and for the album is... It was kind of maybe I was maybe expecting them to sound a little bit different. I was surprised to find that the genre of music this is. I think if you're to use indie as a genre, like this absolutely fits in that, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that it sort of casually flits in and out of sort of pop folk and just straight up rock and some country and even a little bit of emo in the vocals here and there. It's very, has a very specific production. I always feel like I'm hearing like what feels like a dozen of his vocals blended in together. And I was kind of surprised at some of the balancing act that happens on this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Andy Hall's voice, I think, is kind of peculiar. You know, it's very distinct. And I think the way that the production layers, not just his voice, but a number of sounds. I mean, this thing is super produced, mm-hmm. more so than, I think, than any of their previous albums. And it was funny because they joked this was going to be a sort of, you know, a cutting away from all of that noise and going back to their roots, as it were, playing just the instruments raw. And this is, I think, in a good way, super produced. There's a ton of layering of synthesizer and guitars and vocals all throughout this thing. Which creates sort of that ghostly, I think, really dark atmosphere. The cover art of that sort of lone pine tree winding up and a person just hanging on by one of the little pines there is, I think, really indicative of the sound on this thing. It's a very gray sounding album. Lots of, I think, anxiety toward what's lying ahead to the characters' futures, feelings of desperation, of not getting what was promised to you. It's coming from, I think, a pretty rural state of mind.
Yeah.
There's some really powerful lyrics on this thing and some excellent instrumentals.
Yeah. We talk about this a lot on the show. It's always kind of important to me, at least, to consider, you know, more than ever, there is a demand that music be in the moment. And there's always something that, especially from an artist, I don't know Manchester Orchestra, but for artists that we've reviewed who have been more considered to be more like socially relevant, to hear them produce sort of classic albums, like sort of like timeless albums in an era where I think we're lacking for timely albums, it's like an annoyance. And I find that in some ways this is a very timely album. Plenty of the tracks, I do find lyrically these songs to be kind of labyrinthine sometimes.
Sure.
But they all do touch on this rural life, but not just rural life as in like, I'm going down to the convenience store where I work. I like to smoke cigarettes while I'm on my break. There's some tension to it. There's a sense of violence in some of the songs. The one track that isn't named the blank, it's like Lead, South Dakota.
Yeah.
There's some vague references to violence in it, or someone was maybe killed or something. I tried to read the lyrics and interpret them, and I was having a hard time actually understanding what it was that was being said. But it reminds me of that movie that came out, The Dark Knight.
The Batman movie?
Well, it's in reference to that. There's a movie that's made. It's called Dark Knight without a K, and it is a fictional version of the town in which the Dark Knight Rises shooting occurred, and how there's just guns everywhere and a lack of things to do, a lot of financial woes, and this sort of constant being surrounded by violence in the media. And I feel like there's some of that in this album. I don't know. Maybe that's just me imprinting on it a little bit, but.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely feel the violence here, but it's hard to know exactly what's going on. It is intentionally sort of obscure, and the lyrics aren't always straightforward. But just reading some of those lines from Lead, South Dakota, it says, there are parts of me just stuck inside the grocery in the produce aisle with the deadbeats, rustling, trying to look busy, but they're high like me. There are parts of you I see you argue with yourself, and I think you're crazy, really. We're both running out of days. I pray you get by like me. This is temporary. I just heard I'm going to be a dad. South Dakota, every winter someone loses it. I'm lost without a single clue as to where I'm headed. I wait for her because without her, I'm going to sink. You know, like, again, no real clear idea of who this person is, and maybe the identities shift from song to song, but there is that constant feeling of desperation or anxiety or some overheaded loomingness that's just outside the front door.
I think that stuff can be very effective, and I think musically the sort of recurring motifs and what this track essentially begins a medley, do really well to build and release tension in the same way. But I do feel like lyrically and musically that maybe I think these songs are in the right state of mind, and I think they do. I think he does find success as a writer, but I think he also overwrites a lot. I think I always find that there's a little bit, like there's just so many ideas being thrown at you. There's a lot of jumbles of words. There are sometimes where we're meant to be resting in a moment, like a big rock moment where he's just, the chorus is just this complex sentence with these sort of vague, you know, 10-cent words, that I find that maybe he's tripping his over his own 2 feet a little bit.
Sure.
But
I think
like, it's interesting. It's like something on its face, like makes sense and you get the vibe right away. But I also think there's like, I see the writer maybe a little bit too much.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's part of the experience they're going for, is that the lyrics they're providing aren't necessarily telling a straight narrative for you to pull from, but the lyrics in combination with the soundscapes they're creating is sort of cultivating a feeling inside of you, and that feeling is what's sort of shaping the narrative inside of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe a little expressionist, but I still find that there's a little bit of a heavy hand here.
Okay. Do you have some songs that you think are maybe a bit too heavy-handed?
Let's see here. Well, here, let's start at the top here, The Maze.
All right.
This is a track that is, it's also confusing because where this album starts and then by the time it gets to its fourth track, it feels like we're beginning a story after it's been began already 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And this first track, The Maze, seemed to be like a love letter or to a person or life or something. It's a sort of like gospel-y folk song. It reminded me a whole lot starting out of like the Avett Brothers or Mumford and maybe more Mumford and Sons, somebody who's a little bit more, or like The Head and the Heart, someone who's a little bit more of this like soaring folk music. And I find that it tries kind of hard.
Yeah. Well, production again is turned up quite a bit, and we do get that sweeping gospel cow choir at the end whenever he
gospel
says
cow.
Gospel cow. The gospel cow. No.
Sorry, gospel... wait, what are you up to, bro? I'm just milking the gospel cow. Not me.
No, when the gospel choir comes in singing the line, "You lift that burden off of me." Let's play a little bit from The Maze so you can hear that. And then we've got like all those whispering voices in the background, like something's going on. It's a pretty heavy-handed prologue to the narrative that's about to take place. I'll give you that.
But see, here's my experience, is that it goes from The Maze, which is heavy-handed. It is. There's a lot going on. I'm wondering like, oh, is this going to be one of these more like atmospheric albums where it's this big statement, but the author's more interested in making the statement than what the statement actually says? But then it kicks right into The Gold. I mean, really, these songs tie in together really nicely. And I think as a songwriter, there's a lot more to learn about what the Manchester Orchestra man in the song. I think it's like, I think the Gold is a very good track.
Yeah. Let's play a little bit of The Gold. I love this track. Obviously, I mentioned on a previous episode how much I love it, but I think the guitar work here is gorgeous. I think the production is excellent. And lyrically, man, this is really compelling. I think it's the most engaging song lyrically on the entire album. This conversation between a man and a wife or someone in a relationship saying, I don't think I love you anymore. That line, "You've become my ceiling," that in some way I'm resenting you for keeping me from doing the things that I think I should be doing, or feeling like we're stuck inside of these circumstances we can't control. He mentions that gold mine changed you, which again goes back to that South Dakota kind of We are all in despair because everything around us is collapsing.
Right.
Towns are shutting down. Yeah, man, I think this is a really compelling track, both lyrically and musically. It all comes together in this beautiful combination. Really, really compelling stuff here.
Yeah. I think it's when narratively he is at his least, he's not obfuscating his message at all, or his story or his characters. And that's kind of how I would describe most of what these songs are lyrically, is about about characters. I think it's a very narrative heavy album, but I also think it's when he's guiding us through the source of tension in the music the most easily. You mentioned that the guitar is very beautiful, and I think that's because it resonates with a few feelings, that riff that's in the middle of this thing, that's sort of descending,
yeah.
Like, it has a sort of rustic Western charm to it. And it's also kind of bittersweet. I feel like I'm describing this like a wine.
Yeah. Just keep sniffing it, right? Get the aroma, right? the mouth feel.
Yeah. It's got a little bit of a broken up marriage. Oh, just a taste of cowboy. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the back end, really strong, fruity head.
I feel like I'm milking the sacred. What was it? I'm milking the gospel cow.
Yeah. Okay. So that to me seems like that is the epitome of Manchester Orchestra's sound, right? So that is great guitars, great songwriting, a compelling vocal performance from Andy Hull. That's why I go to this band. And that's why this song rejuvenated my energy so strongly. I was really ready for this album after that strong single. But I think in a lot of spaces, the guitar is kind of swept away in favor of some more swirling synthy production. And I might have some anxiety about that stuff if I don't think it turned out as well as it did on this record. And I think the follow-up, The Moth, is maybe the best indicator of that swirling synthy style working successfully. I think this thing is also super strong right after it. I'm going to play a little bit of The Moth. So sort of brooding, swirling, and that like little picky guitar doo-ding, 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 doo-ding is underneath it all the whole time.
Yeah.
While we get those really heavy layers of synth sound on top of it. I think this is an awesome track too, man.
Yeah. And I think tracks like this also are heavily producer-oriented, which is an interesting juxtaposition for music that I think is largely meant to feel intimate and personal from the writer. To have these sort of external elements of like, how is this mixed? Like the soundscape is different than the last one. Like everything feels a little different. It feels a little more wide open. I maybe had difficulty fully embracing all of the music as a result. Like tracks like The Moth, I was happy to jump into after The Gold. But I always found myself feeling several ways about it. I don't think I ever, in many of these tracks, felt completely drunk on the music, especially when in a track like this, I think is some of the clumsiest he is lyrically in the whole album, with lyrics like, force myself to take a different name, buried with metonymy, decide for me, throw the man you used to be away, bury him with rivalry entirely.
What does that mean?
I don't know, and I feel like it is intentionally obtuse. Or unintentionally obtuse. I feel like he's using words like that for the wrong reason.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is to get the sort of the rhyming sound, the metonymy, rivalry entirely. They've come a similar rhyme there. So just going for the way the words sound rather than the meaning.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
I actually think for me, the highlight of the sort of folk and synth, and I'm gonna, you know, say maybe just a hint, just a tasty morsel of like whiny emo-ish kind of rock vocals,
mm-hmm.
coming to track the grocery, which is sort of the latter half of this medley that begins with Lead SD, where it's sort of rebuilt itself from the valley. It's gone back to the peak. And that track is all just release. It's all everything that you just described. But for me, I maybe enjoy it more because I've been happy to sit with that sound for as long as I did because he's doing so much with it.
Yeah. Let's play a little bit of The Grocery. Yeah, it's all release. You mentioned that medley there. Lead South Dakota, The Alien, The Sunshine, and The Grocery are all seamlessly integrated with one another. They flow really, I think, excellently back to back to back, subtly shifting the mood and the melody each time around. And then when that guitar riff comes in at the opening to The Grocery, it is that final climax, that release. But also lyrically, I think this is the most satisfying of those tracks. It builds to the greatest emotional impact. An awesome point on the album for me as well.
I was actually kind of curious because listening to this, I immediately thought, this seems like a very Charlie thing. I'm seeing how why he's jumping into this the way he might be.
This album?
The track, The Alien. It's the moment where it starts. It's continuing the rhythm from the last song, and it lets the instruments just drop out for a minute and then resumes with the percussion right back into that rhythm. I was thinking that was a very Charlie moment.
I want to play maybe those transitions then so we can hear them just because of how seamlessly they're integrated. Let's pop to the end of Lead South Dakota very quickly. Okay, we'll play the last 10 seconds or so.
Okay.
Okay, so there's that one. I think going from The Alien to The Sunshine.
Oh, that's what
I
meant. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. All right, we'll play that one. Here's the last 10 seconds of The Alien into The Sunshine. And so it's similar, it's evocative of the previous song, but also totally different, you know? I love that so much, man. I love when songs seamlessly transition. It's why the Abbey Road,
here we go.
Get me started on that again. But like Jeff Rosenstock did it in his album last year. Any time that a musician or a group of musicians come together and thoroughly compose their work, so it's not just a collection of singles, but an entire album that is designed with a feeling and a motif, I am 100% in that stuff. And it's why I will always gutturally, instinctually put albums like this above other ones that are more experimental and more maybe less even. But I don't know. I can understand where this is maybe not as challenging or complex as previous albums that we've had this year. And certainly I have liked albums more than this. But there's something to be said about the cohesiveness of this record and the careful decisions that were made by the group to compose a record that is entirely focused, certainly more so than any of their previous works, gets big ups and big points in my book. Yeah. And yes, there is a big difference between ups and points.
Well, can you describe the difference for me?
Points have a numeric value. Mm-hmm. Ups are not necessarily quantifiable, but they are just a sort of, you know, a special something that that person has that I recognize within them.
Oh, okay. I see. I thought ups were when you like drop something or made a mistake and you go, ups.
No, that's an oops.
Oh, that's a whoopsie.
Yeah. That's a whoopsie. Yeah.
Big whoopsies. Big whoopsie to just orchestra.
You gotta love that transition though, man. Gotta love that.
I do, but listening to it, it had you all over it.
Oh, you're so right. You know me so well.
I know, like probably 30%. Well, you keep much of your private life pretty close to the vest.
That's true.
Every night at 7 p.m., you leave your house and you won't tell me what happens until you come back at 11.
Uh-huh. Okay, so just transitioning out of that medley, then we've got a couple other big singles. The Wolf, mm-hmm. which I think is sort of similar to The Moth in some ways, another heavy, more angry single. And then I think the last three songs then kind of go together as well with The Mistake, The Parts, and The Silence. The Parts being a straight acoustic song with no backing instrumentals aside from Andy Hall's voice. Talking about some pretty heavy stuff there. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on these final tracks?
I will say the last three pretty accurately describe my last sexual encounter.
Yeah, I think that's the goal. Order.
Yeah.
Did you like the line in the... What is it? The Parts, where he says, "I'm a water boy overwhelmed by the screaming."
No, I don't know. I think that maybe it's a little cloying here at the end for me.
Yeah.
And I think that my overall impression of Manchester Orchestra as an experience is that I do think there's complexity in this album. I do think there's stuff worth exploring. I think it's timely. I think it's music written about a segment of society typically left alone or ignored in mainstream music. Like a more realistic view of what rural America actually looks like. But I also get the sense that this is someone who is a very ambitious musician and writer who maybe needs an editor a little bit. Someone who could use a little bit more of a cohesive structure to his music, or who is willing to make sacrifices to his music in order to better convey what it is he has to say. And I think whenever I'm getting towards the end here, the album has won me over. I'm still enjoying it, but I'm recognizing some of the more wordy and overwritten elements here at the end. And the songs last, they kind of last a little bit longer. I think the last track is 7 minutes or so.
Sure.
I think The Parts in particular, though, just kind of I could do without.
Yeah, I think there's an intense need for some dramatic moment in the final tracks of this record. And I think it's important that that's the second to last song on the record, sort of the emotional climax here. But I do wonder if it's a bit too on the nose, a bit too, there's a word for what he's going, sentimental maybe. He's just trying to get at a feeling and an emotion, but I don't know. And maybe he's trying too hard to get at it, and so it comes across as not as effective.
Yeah. I there's something about it that in a moment where I feel like I should be like feeling a lot, and what he's communicating should be so visceral. That's like visceral miserableness. It should be so visceral to me that I'm overwhelmed by it. But really what I'm left with is a bunch of sort of clunky phrases and sort of overdone themes. I mean, we've already had this long medley where we've come to these musical conclusions and we've already felt the release of a lot of the tension being built up. And now we're just sort of rolling in the aftermath of that. And that leaves me feeling kind of cold.
Yeah. Maybe some other criticisms. I wonder, even though I'm a huge fan of this record, looking at these songs, I have a hard time knowing what the main melody instrumentally is in each. That I think a lot of times the songs do blend together, and it's hard to distinguish one track from the other. I like a lot of it, but they're not necessarily singular.
Yeah.
As tracks, aside from The Goal.
I agree with that. And you know, that's that. I think that medley works really well, though, the lead South Dakota medley. Mm-hmm. Although, does it irk you a little bit that there's only one track on the album that's called...
A little bit.
It's kind of annoying.
There's so much consistency otherwise, and they just throw that one down the drain.
Yeah, like, why do that?
And also, why is the lyric about the grocery in Lead South Dakota when the grocery doesn't have a lyric about the grocery?
That's really annoying. It's confusing, and it's like... It's just so obtuse for no reason. I mean, this could be, I think... Like, I get why you like Manchester Orchestra after listening to this, because I feel like listening to this, there's like an amazing album in this guy. There's something in here that's really neat. I mean, so many albums that are kind of more rural always have to like put on a face, like a fake rural face to try to capture the emotion. They try to like really exaggerate their down home nature vocally. Right. The only other band I can think of offhand that also did this successfully was Pop with last year's record, where he talked about Pine Point. But I don't know. I just think he needs an editor. I think that's just kind of where I'm going to land on this thing. I think there's some really cool stuff in here. There's some special moments. The production is really interesting, but I want a little bit more trim. I feel like an editor would tell him, call Lead South Dakota something else. Call it the something. Like, why has it got to be the
grocery?
Different?
Call it the grocery and call the grocery something else.
Exactly. There's so many. You have so many lyrics to choose from that you could refer to in your title.
Yeah. And I guess that's why I like them so much, is because I do have that country background, and maybe I see something of some authenticity inside of that.
Yeah.
There are so many tracks that hit me emotionally on previous records, like Simple Math. I think there's a lot of great songs on there. April Fool and Pensacola are really great. Simple Math is also great. They're really angry on the album Mean Everything to Nothing, with one of the tracks being I've Got Friends. The lyric is, I've got friends in all the right places. I know what they want, and I know they don't want me to stay. Kind of realizing that the people that you thought were close to you aren't actually the people that you wanted. And there's some real anger inside of that song, that recognition and understanding.
Yeah,
man. There's like I keep coming back to them because I feel like they've got something there. And this record, I think, is easily their highest point on the charts to date. They've got something special. But knowing them, they're probably going to throw this whole sound away and start over from scratch again next time, and it might be a full a cappella album a la the Swiss Army Man soundtrack.
Yeah.
But as it stands now, man, how about that album cover too, man? I think that's really effective.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting – I think it's a great summation of the album, because on one hand, if you look at it at a glance, it's a very immediate image that you're, oh, this is hopeless, this is despair, you're hanging on by a thread. But then the more you look at it, it's like, okay, well, the tree is kind of curved like a human spine. There's only really branches at the top. This is kind of a complicated message, I guess. It looks like the tree is almost pointing down, like descending towards something. What is happening? Unnecessarily complicated, but legitimately complex, I think.
Yeah. I like quite a bit. I think it complements the music on the record, and I think I'm going to revisit this one again. I think I'm going to come back to it and spend some more time with it, because maybe there are some riddles I haven't solved out yet, or maybe I never will, but just the act of sitting inside the sound and contemplating it is fun for my brain. So I think it's a huge success for them, huge rebound after their previous album, which was not solid.
Yeah,
and I give it a full recommendation. So check it out if you get the chance.
I did. Well, we just talked about it.
You did. Right. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. We'll tell your friends.
Okay.
let's go to the highlight reel. I'm going to take 4 off this bad boy because I like it so much. I am going to take The Wolf. I'm going to take The Moth. I think both those things are nice, angrier tracks. We've got some excellent production. The layering there is quite good. The Grocery, as you mentioned, Mark, is a big climactic moment on this record, so I gotta take that one. And of course, The Gold is still the gold standard on this bad boy, at the top of the list. One of the best songs of the year so far. Everything I love about it, Manchester Orchestra in one song right there.
Wow, there you go.
That's it.
So I'm definitely taking Lead South Dakota. I think that is it's got pretty much all my favorite stuff on the album, and I'm really debating. I don't think I need both The Grocery and The Gold.
You got to take The Gold then.
I don't know. Because here's the thing. Here's the thing. Here's the thing.
You love that emo stuff.
This is the debate. That's part of it. But also, The Grocery is my favorite moment musically on the entire album. But I feel like it's somewhat less powerful without being preceded by The Alien and The Sunshine, which I am definitely not taking.
I think that's definitely true.
So what do I do here?
I think you take The Gold. Like a smart man.
Oh, man, but yeah, I guess that does make more sense.
You take The Gold or you take them both. Those are my options.
All right. Well, I think in that case, I got to take The Gold, buddy.
All right. That's it. All right. That's Manchester Orchestra's A Black Mile to the Surface. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we will talk about Charlie Puth and figure out how he's going to try to sway our ears to the Billboard this week. So stay tuned. back inside the grocery. Alrighty, we are back and ready to talk about Charlie Puth's Attention. This little number here has been sitting up at slot number 8 this week on the Billboard Hot 100, and so we will give it the full dissection here on Weekly Beats. Do you know the song, Mark?
I'm sure I do, but I've never heard, I think, out loud, other than last week, the name Charlie Puth.
Yeah. And again, no connection to me. Just for whatever reason, we have the same name. It's a weird thing.
Right.
Never heard of this guy in my life.
I do think it's disappointing he spells his name with a U and not two O's.
That's important.
He could have been a mayor of a Dr. Seuss village with a name like Charlie Puth.
And instead he said, nope, I'm going to be a Billboard singer.
Oh, God, what a mistake. I know a choice I would have made in that situation.
Well, let us give him his attention, yeah? That he so desperately needs.
Yeah, let's bestow upon him the greatest of analyses, the Weekly Beaters.
All right. Here we go. You've been running around, throwing that dirt all on my name. Cause you knew that I'd call you up. You've been going around every party in LA. Cause you knew that I'd be at one. Oh, I know that dress. Okay, so we got ourselves a zany.
Inzane in the membrane.
Inzane in the brain. Yeah, we got one of those guys, huh?
Yeah. Is this the third or the fourth track right now in the Hot 100 that has a guitar that goes...
Well, it's certainly a trend. I have a second treat for you, Mark. We've got some authored verified annotations.
Oh, the genius annotations.
The genius, Charlie Puth himself, has bestowed genius with his own genius. So for the opening lyrics, you've been running around, throwing the dirt all on my name, because you knew that I'd call you up. Here's the annotation. I won't say who exactly, but we'll just make some variables. I heard after I had cut it off with her, I kept hearing from... dot, dot, dot. It's a very small industry, this music industry. So you hear from many different outlets and people about, oh, she's saying this about you. She told this person that you were, and you're no good. And I never had heard it from the horse's mouth. So I always thought it would be interesting to include that, like, right off the get-go when you start off the record. It sounds kind of fun, too. I have a very Swedish approach to lyrics, so sometimes my initial scratched lyrics make no sense. As long as the syllables sound good, it sounds fun to sing, but there's a little substance to it and storyline behind it.
I've never heard that, a Swedish approach.
I have no idea what that means. Is he Swedish?
Like Swedish Chef? Because honestly, because if you think about it, that guitar part sounds a lot like the Swedish Chef. Just
no, I was going to say... No, he's American.
Okay.
Most known for his song See You Again, which he wrote and co-produced and performed with Khalifa for the Fury 7 soundtrack as a tribute to the late Paul Walker.
Oh, wow. Well, it sounds more to me like a tribute to this woman he's got a real vendetta against.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And okay, I'm getting nervous about this one, Charlie. I feel like starting the song off on this note is never a good one. It's always going to... You don't start off a song that's going to say a lot and mean a lot about the world around you with, this one person was talking behind my back.
Who else was doing that this year? Was it the Starboy himself?
I do believe The Weeknd had some lyrics along those lines, yes.
Yeah. All right, another annotation for the next line. Every party in LA, because you know that I knew that I knew that I'd be at one. Mm-hmm. This is a long annotation. This guy loves to write. A typical LA party is full of dudes who look like they took 6 hours to figure out what kind of bomber they were going to wear. Whereas I just walk in with a shirt on that I've been wearing for 2 days because I wrote a good song in that shirt and I want to write a good song 2 days later. So I thought it would be a good idea to keep that shirt on. So I kept the same shirt on and they're like, who's this kid in this half eyebrow coming to my rented house with my rented Audi in the front? It's like that type of shit. And sometimes it's cool, but The humble LA parties are cool, but they're few and far between, and I always seem to get invited to the I'm trying to prove myself to everybody parties. And that's where I usually take my gin and tonic and just sit in the corner and just think of songs like this to write. But for everybody who thinks they're missing something at an LA party, you're really not. If you ever get invited to a party on Nightingale Avenue in the Hollywood Hills or Sunset Plaza, stay away. If you're from New York, stay in New York. I'm not shitting on LA because there's a lot of great things about LA, but the parties where people are trying to make it, I mean, as you can see, I have some problems with it. So I put it in the second half of that verse.
God, what a humble brag.
Oh, seriously.
God. I've been invited to so many parties, and let me tell you, I find many of them
awful.
Boring.
And I am wearing this like shirt I've been in for 2 days because I wrote a great shirt in this shirt, but I'm just going to keep wearing it still. Hopefully then I can write another good song soon.
God, I...
Yeah, man.
Ugh. Now, I had misheard one of the lyrics, and I'm actually reading another annotation, a user annotation for the first lyrics here. For the lyrics, you've been running round
is the lyric.
Here is the genius annotation. This girl's pretty darn good at getting people to acknowledge her. She said some bad things about Charlie in hopes that he would contact her to call her out on it. This demonstrates how well thought out her plans are and how determined she is to catch Charlie's eye again. The only problem...
We'll see about that.
We will. He sees through all her tricks and won't fall for them. Dirtle on my name is often misheard as turtle on my name. Or turtle on my knee. The latter has now made an appearance on Urban Dictionary, being described as a synonym for talking badly about someone. Charlie knows that the lyric is misheard and has poked fun at it on Twitter. And there is a tweet from Charlie posted here, and it's just the lyric but with turtle in it.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah. It's fun like Covfefe was fun. Only someone self-aware would do that. That's proof he's self-aware, isn't it?
Enjoy. I'm surprised he didn't end it with the word enjoy.
Oh, man. This is, I don't know. This is reminding me of the Shawn Mendes track, too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You've been running around and around and running around. Was that the best vocals that I've ever been sung?
It was pretty good. I got to tell you, man. That was pretty impressive.
Nice.
Shall we keep it going?
I gotta remember to wear the shirt. I only wear one shirt when we do the 30-second breakdown because one time it was really good, and I'm always trying to recapture that magic.
I hear that, man. That's why I'm wearing the same underwear every day for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I hear that.
Let's keep it going.
Okay. This karma, perfume regret, you got me thinking about when you were mine. Oh, and now I'm all upon you, what you expect. You're not coming home with me tonight. You just want attention. You don't want my heart. Maybe you just hate the thought of me with someone new. Yeah, you just want attention. I knew from the start.
All right.
I'm not loving what he's saying there.
Okay. What's throwing you off?
Just like, I know why you dressed up that way. I know what you want.
Now I'm all up on you. Is that the lyric that is giving you some problem?
And now I'm all up on you. What you expect?
Now I'm all up on you. What you expect? All right. So here's Charlie Puth's defense of that lyric. Literally, when I just saw her, it sounds mean, but I just ditched the girl that I was with, and I was so enamored by this girl that I wanted everything. I knew it was over, but I just thought if I walked up to her, something would ignite again. But I figured she's just not coming home with me tonight. She just wants attention.
Because she wore a dress?
I don't know. Man, this guy writes so many long annotations. Okay. Here's the one for the first line of the chorus. I know that dress is karma, perfume you regret. I go to the Edition Hotel, and she's wearing this very distinct perfume. It's almost like she wore it on purpose, because it's the perfume that she wore when I first fell in love with her, and I've never fallen in love with anybody like that before.
Okay, stop. Can I stop you? Can I stop you?
Yeah, go ahead.
That's weird.
It's very specific.
Why would a person... These are very long, and I think we should take a few pauses in these to really think about them, because why would a person buy a perfume and then if they're dating someone new or they break up with someone, ditch the perfume forever?
I mean, you are not a woman, Mark, so you can't make that claim.
I have never changed deodorants right. for a person.
Well, that deodorant's dead. Can't use that anymore.
That's so obnoxious.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Well, okay. Let me continue. We've got two paragraphs to go here.
Okay, sorry.
I came in with someone who I was definitely having a nice time with. I enjoyed her company, but she wore that perfume on purpose to F me up, and I'll never forget that. That's one of those things I told Cash, and we kind of embellished on that and inflated that and made it the whole theme of the verse, perfume regret. I'm wearing this red dress right now because you called it off with me and you in my mind, F me over, so I'm going to wear this right now because I want you to know how badly you effed up. What you did to me is going to happen to you, and what I'm wearing right now is a reminder that karma is in the future for you. This perfume I'm wearing, I hope you regret everything that you did. And honestly, I did nothing. But you know, I don't need to go into that.
No, that's all.
Oh, that's the thing
about.
You don't need to go into? That's the one thing you don't need to go into? Man.
The part where you did something is the part that you don't want to get into? But the part where this woman kept wearing her perfume she owns is an attack on you? God, imagine having the lack of self-awareness to have that specific, oh, well, obviously this person would only wear perfume for me. Like, imagine that. Like, the dress is, like, one weird, crappy thing to think enough. But, like, the perfume, what a weird thing to believe. You're not only obnoxious and a little bit of a jerk, but you're also weird. You're a weirdo.
But I bet that there's a decent-sized population of people that would say that that's definitely intentional, that her doing that is definitely an intentional action.
What, with all the people at the LA party?
Yeah, definitely.
The whole party agreed?
The entire party.
Oh, God.
One more annotation for the line you got me thinking about when you were mine. I think back about the time when I was in that hotel room and she was literally crying to me about how mistreated she was by her ex. Had me thinking that I could be the guy who could fix her like I wanted. She had me convinced after 5 hours of the speech that I could be the guy that could fix her, that could make her believe that love is a real thing again. What she was wearing, everything that she was dolled up. She was literally dressed to the T of how she was when I met her that night. And when we hadn't spoken and I saw her after a couple of months, of course, I was thinking about the time that I had thought of her. This seems very specific and personal to one person, like in a gross kind of Taylor Swift, Swiftian sort of way.
But not even, okay, but like Taylor Swift songs are all just like, oh, you left me and that makes me sad. Because that's the thing that would make someone sad. This is this sense of, like, she was literally crying in a hotel room and she thought I could fix her, but she didn't let me fix her. Like, that's crazy. Dude, we can dig pretty deep in these annotations and we can, you know, take things really seriously that I think the majority of people listening just kind of let fly by. And I'm sure that's kind of frustrating to fans of the songs, but like, this is the first time when I have heard an annotation and thought, wow, that's even worse than I was going to make comments about.
He just firmly solidified your thoughts on the lyrics.
Yeah. It's like, oh, here was my, I was like, okay, when I first listened to this lyric, I know that dress is karma, perfume, regret. It got me thinking about when you were mine. And I'm thinking like, you know, that's kind of a misguided thing. It seems a little bit like he's taking ownership of literally her appearance and making her revolve around him entirely and not being able to see things from her perspective. But, you know, I don't know. He's probably just an idiot. And then listening to this, it's like, no, he's malicious. He's a malicious idiot on top of that.
I got one more cherry on top of that for you.
Okay.
The annotation for the chorus. So the annotation, or rather the lyric to the chorus says, you just want attention, you don't want my heart. Maybe you just hate the thought of me with someone new. Yeah, you just want attention, I knew from the start. You're just making sure I'm never getting over you.
He didn't know that from the start. The whole point of it is that he didn't know that from the start.
Well, here's his thoughts. We would be talking in the hotel, and she would be like, do you want to sleep over? And I'd be like, yes, I'm going to get it in.
Oh my God!
And then nothing would happen. Which is totally fine. But after the fifth time of that happening, I knew what she was doing. I knew that she was trying to make me so embedded to her that I would never leave her. But I would never get what I wanted out of her. So she was just doing that repetitively Repetitively. Repetitively.
You're milking the Bible cow right now, my friend.
Just to get... So she was doing that repetitively just to get something out of me, which was for me to be attracted to or attached to her hip at all
attracted
times.
Attracted to her hip.
Attracted to her hips, but also attached to her hips at all times.
This is a real... This guy is...
I'm going to get it in, Mark.
Oh, my God. That's so awful.
There it is. In his own words.
Oh, my God. I've never felt someone asking, hey, I'm really upset about things. Also, what amount of time did he know this woman that they have met at a hotel every time that they were both staying at? Was this just like over the course of a week?
These LA parties, man, you know, they're always in those hotels.
God, that is disgusting. How can you write this? How did society allow this man to write this and have a song about it and then to celebrate him and give him all the money in the world and then a platform to explain to people, yeah, I wanted to get it in and she didn't let me after five times, so I decided, ugh, I know what she's trying to do. And everyone said, great, he should have all these things. Here's $1 billion.
I think a lot of guys said that.
Literally, this is the song equivalent, lyrically, of Such a Nasty Woman. He has written a song for the Donald Trump quote, Such a Nasty Woman.
Yeah. The chorus sonically is different than I expected it to be. It strips away a lot of the stuff and is just sort of a straight bass line. I think it sounds all right.
I'm going to be honest with you. It's very hard to hear the song on your end. So I'm really just getting the lyrics here.
You're getting it through the phone speaker.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hear a bit more, shall we? We'll see if this thing changes around, Neil.
Okay, great.
All right. You're just making sure I'm never getting over you. Oh. You can run around, run around, run around, throwing that dirt all on my name. Cause you knew that I knew that I knew that I'd call you up. Baby, now that we're, now that we're, now that we're right here standing face to face, you already know, already know, already know that you want. Oh. I know that dress is karma. Another dress is karma, Mark. Ugh.
I hear what you're saying, though. I could hear a little bit better that time.
It's kind of funky. I think it's got a nice style to it. I like it better than a lot of the other pop stuff we've heard this year.
I don't know, man. I just find this pretty repugnant.
Well, lyrically.
Yeah, but I can't separate that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if over Beethoven's fifth, Beethoven sang in time with da-da-da-da, several racial slurs. Probably would not have.
Women are dumb. Nobody likes them. I tried to sleep in one and then she turned me down and I got mad. So I wrote the song about you at Tiffany. I think you're stupid and no one likes you and I won't call you again. Copyright Beethoven's. Is that fifth? I think it's fifth.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Yeah, I think that's I don't know. I mean, this is a story. In this plot, he met someone, was attracted to them, met with her in the hotel room, and she was literally crying because she said that she just wanted someone to really care about her, and she didn't feel like she had that. So he leaves, and then over the course of weeks is on purpose trying to make her feel like he cares about what she has to say because he wants to, in his own words, get it in.
Get it in.
Finally, she doesn't let him get it in for a fifth time, and he says she's a bad person and then talks about how she's just an attention whore. And then weeks later, he abandons a woman he is with to try to bone her again and then wrote a song about how she's a bad person.
Yeah. Second verse, same as the first here, Mark. Almost identical in structure.
Yeah, like this friendship.
Don't expect this song to really go anywhere, Mark. It's going to sit in this space for the next 3 minutes or so.
If you told me this story, I would stop you and I would say, do you think maybe you weren't actually caring about her, though?
But I think it's on you, though, right?
Well, there's like, hey, maybe you didn't. You're not actually really thinking about the other person.
Take a look at your actions a little bit closer, man. Reconsider where you're coming from.
Oh, my God.
That's and amazing. I'd be like, no, 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 no. She's the worst. And then you're like, no, you're right. And then we turn the song on and dance all night long.
Oh, what hell? What fresh hell?
Women.
Oh my God, he wrote a song called Marvin Gaye.
I bet that's really respectful.
Oh my God, it's just a picture of his face. Oh, I'm disgusted right now. Oh no, I've heard this. I am pretty sure Becky had me, well, let's be real, forced me to listen to this song because she liked it.
This song right now?
No. This Marvin Gaye song of his.
Okay. Do you want to play a little clip it and see if that's it?
Oh, and this features Meghan Trainor.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine two artists better suited to fill the role of Marvin Gaye than Charlie Puth and Meghan Trainor?
It sounds like everything I hate.
Okay. I'm going to play it and see what happens.
Let's Marvin Gaye and get it on. You got the healing that I want. Just like they say it in the song. Till the dawn, let's Marvin Gaye and get it on.
A beautiful tribute.
Gross.
Should we try to find Meghan Trainor's verse? Real
quick? No, but yes.
Okay, let's see if I can find it. Okay, I don't really want to listen to that anymore. Oh, but wait, there's an annotation here. This is from Charlie Puth. People ask me, were you thinking of Marvin Gaye when you wrote it? And I'm like, no. I think it was just buried in my subconscious.
What an idiot.
This is the song Marvin Gaye. You use him as a verb for what you do, for getting it in.
It's not that we're reading into this either. It's that he's got it all out there in his own words that's especially damning.
This isn't like last week when the artist just was horribly cruel in the lyrics, but very sweet in his annotations or descriptions of them.
And also like 18 years old, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's press on then.
Okay. You got me thinking about where you were going.
Okay, separate the lyrics from the song instrumentation there, and I think it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, there is a bass part to that song. It's got a funk to it. I'll give you
that. Groovy. It's funky.
But his vocals are pretty bad.
I think the vocals are okay too, though.
No, his vocals are riding this trend wave. Like, we just listened to Marvin Gaye, and his vocals in that fit with the, we're doing this kind of 50s reference in our music.
Motown,
we're going classic.
That's why Meghan Trainor's here.
There's one annotation I don't think we've covered for the entire song. Did we cover that one? I don't think we did.
Oh, no, we haven't.
Okay.
More gold.
Yeah, I'm going to read this as it's written. Attention is the first single off of Charlie Puth's second studio album following 9-track Mind. In the song, bad name for a thing. In the song, Charlie expresses his encounters with an ex-girlfriend who's trying to tempt him to come back to her by playing with his emotions, though he knows she is just looking for attention and isn't interested in a permanent relationship. To promote this single, Puth opened an exhibit named The Attention Room on Melrose Avenue, Los Angeles, which featured a LED infinity tunnel, further emphasizing the song's theme of attention.
What's an infinity tunnel, and how do I get one for my own house?
Which featured a LED infinity tunnel.
It's probably pretty cool, Mark. You weren't there.
It probably was pretty cool.
All right, let's keep going.
Okay. Listen to that bridge. Tell me that's not generic.
Yeah, man. What are you doing to me? What are you doing to me, huh? What are you doing to me? What are you doing to me, huh? What are you doing to me? What are you doing to me, huh? What are you doing? What are you doing to me? What are you doing to me, huh?
It's bad and I don't like it. How much longer is in the song?
We got about a minute to go.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess other than his character as a person, I'm just hearing this in an elevator. I'm hearing this and I'm thinking about being in an elevator or like a taxi or an Uber, just hearing it.
Or like on the phone with somebody. This is what's playing in the meantime.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I'm just going to charge ahead.
Here is another annotation from Charlie Puth that we did not get to.
Okay.
It's for the pre-chorus. But just for the concept of the pre-chorus. It's not any lyrics.
Oh, nice.
That chorus was recorded entirely in the back of my tour bus. Every chorus. We had a generator. We were parked and the generator kept coming on and making a low noise. And I had to stop and wait until the generator would stop and then continue on. And a lot of this relationship I was in was based on traveling in tour buses and in hotel rooms. But there was one significant night that happened in a tour bus. It might have been the first time that I kissed her or something simple like that. I was recording the song in the tour bus, and when I was recording that pre-chorus, I just kind of, in the most manly way possible, shed a little tear. Because it was a lot, and I didn't expect it to be a lot either. And in Pro Tools, you copy and paste the sections before it's all produced out to sing over it, and I forgot to copy and paste the last chorus over. And I was just so emotionally all over the place. I was going to delete it, too, and do it the right way, but I was like, F it. We'll just add an extra bar and then copy and paste the chorus over and then produce the rest of it out, if that makes any sense. So it's a real thing. It's not an act. It's hard to listen to it. Oh, God, I can't believe you. It's hard to listen to it, but I kept it in there just because it made it more real. One of the biggest things about me is I wasn't making real music. I was just making show music. And I wanted to show people that there is some substance to me. I do have feelings. I'm not just a Pop-Tart who sings people songs. I write all the songs. I produce all the records. I tune the vocals. Yes, I auto-tune the vocals. Everybody does. That's the reason they sound so good. Lying to you and everything. There's a lot that goes into the art, I guess.
This guy is fascinating to me, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on here.
He is Donald Trump, but he is a young, like,
I was getting major vibes,
Donald
man.
Trump.
I was thinking about that.
Oh my
we
God.
We started at one spot. We ended up in a totally different place.
Getting now defensive about auto-tuning without any prompting from anyone.
Everybody does.
I'm not just a Pop-Tart who sings people's songs.
And you know someone's called him a Pop-Tart at some point. And that's why he's using that insult.
It's probably that woman.
Also, again, with the humble brag here.
Oh my God.
It's hard to listen to, but I kept it in there just because it made it more real.
Yeah. He references Pro Tools.
One of my favorite parts is when he says, one of the biggest things about me is I wasn't making real music. One of the biggest things about me, Mark, is I wasn't making real music.
Yeah. I would say one of your predominant features. Is your friend Charlie a good dude? Well, one of the things about him is he just not really making real music.
Dude.
Yeah. I there is something I'm very fascinated with the Pro Tools reference, though. It's as if he's trying to impress you that he bought the program Pro Tools and knows how to use it. And he
produced my records, guys.
Explain.
I sing my vocals. I write my lyrics.
He copy and pasted it himself. Oh,
I just kind of shed a manly tear right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another gold part we haven't touched on. But in a manly way. Do you think he was joking when he said that?
I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Oh my God, there's more. Should I save the last thing here for?
We got one more. Should we have it at the very end? I feel like it's going to be the dessert on this Sunday.
Oh my God, no, there's so much more. Oh my God, there is so much more. This is from an interview. There's three paragraphs here.
Jesus.
I'll read a short one then, maybe, because there's three of them.
Okay.
All right, so this is to the question, what happens to Charlie's voice in the final pre-chorus?
Good question.
And Charlie says, I kind of just got a little emotional. I decided to keep the take of this. I was going to delete it, but I was like, screw it. And it has an odd bar. It has a second of nothing. It's cool.
I don't know. A couple minutes ago, you said it was hard to listen to, so I don't know who to believe right now, Charlie.
Yeah, it's like one time you're courting the left, one time you're courting the right, but all the time you're not condemning Nazis. What are you doing, Charlie?
Okay. Should I finish it off?
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Last 30 seconds. Okay.
Are you ready for something of a doozy?
Let's wrap it up.
Okay. This is to the question, how did this song come together? And I just want you to think in your mind about other artists who have been asked this question and the kinds of answers that they give.
Okay.
This is Charlie's response. When I came up with this song originally, I was on this hotel bed in this really cool room in the Philippines. I was just watching TV and kind of browsing through Instagram because that's how you watch TV nowadays. You don't really watch it. You look at your phone, you look at the TV at the same time. And I was looking at this Instagram post that somebody had posted. It was this long letter about how he had just broken up with his girlfriend. I don't know this guy. I have no idea why it popped up on my feed. I was just reading it and I was like, damn, this girl really played him and she just wants attention. So I was like, why hasn't anyone made that a song? She just wants attention. The original lyric was like a ballad, how I had it in my head. I pictured plucking strings and then very lushly, she just wants attention. It was a dirty lyric at first. She just wants his attention. And they were like, okay, we can't put that in a song. It sounds too sappy and sad. It sounds too much like a Disney thing if it was strings and butterflies and whatever. So I wanted a funky, walkable bass line, and then I was thinking of a different song, and then I put the melody. All it is just an E-flat major minor. All it is just an E-flat minor scale, and I put it over the bass line that I had in my head, and it just went on perfectly. And I was like, oh, shit! And I took out my phone and recorded a voice note, and I just had that chorus. And if you watch the music video, I put the voice note at the end of it. He's even less...
Who is this?
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Who is this guy talking to that he's saying all this stuff? Like,
it doesn't say. There's just a question and an answer on Genius here. Oh, yeah, there's more.
Wild.
There's more. We probably shouldn't go on too much with all this stuff, but...
We've given him enough of a platform to spread his ideas.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just do this here. How did the music come together? He says, it was literally just a kick drum sample, a 707, a really fake-sounding kick drum, but with a lot of knock to it. Everyone keeps asking me, like, yo, how'd you get Nile Rodgers to play the bass on that song? And they don't realize that it's literally a fake bass. It's a software plugin called Trillion from Spectrotronics. They make other great stuff like Omnisphere and Keyscape. I love their stuff.
Okay,
and
product placement.
That's the rest of this.
Oh, God.
Everyone's asking him how he got Nile Rodgers. Is he that? He really can't.
Well, you know the sign of a narcissist is when they say that everybody tells them things or everybody asks them something. So it's just Trump Jr. I think that instrumentally there's some cool stuff happening. I think it's produced pretty well, but lyrically it's got some issues, obviously.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's pretty standard stuff, and I think maybe the way I'm saying, I feel like I can hear it in an elevator or a car. I think his description of the copy-paste nature of the music is audible too. Although I do understand that is how sound editing works. But I don't know. This is a pretty generic song written by a pretty crappy guy. So I'm not going to take it.
It's a thumbs down for me as well.
Great.
Great. All right, Mark, I'm going to lead off the what else you've been listening to segment this week, because I finally listened to some other stuff, man. I finally got busy and listened to some more stuff.
That's awesome.
First is a new track off the upcoming album Villains from Queens of the Stone Age. They've dropped another hot single on us. The Evil Has Landed is the name of the song. And I'll tell you what, Mark, that first single, I was not loving it.
Fair.
I was a little apprehensive. They say Marky Ronson's coming in to do the production on this thing, and it sounds a little bit too produced, a little bit too clean, and I'm not having it. I'm not feeling it. I'm throwing the brakes on the hype train for Villains here. But The Evil Has Landed, Mark, and the hype train can re-engage to full speed, because this thing is groovy and funky like the great guitar riffage that Josh Homme is known for. Let's play a little bit of The Evil Has Landed. So we got a pretty straight guitar riff to open things up, but then things open up through the verses. Lots of great Josh Homme falsetto here, a very different thing going on in the verses. And that is exactly the kind of sound that I was hoping they might achieve on this record. It sounds like it's got Mark Ronson's fingerprints on it, but it's still classic guitar riffage. It's funky. It's 6.5 minutes long. Lots of guitar sprawling soloing throughout here, man. The hype train is back in gear. I'm ready for this album. 2 weeks to go.
It sounds like classic rock radio before classic rock was classic rock. It was just rock. Like, it sounds... Yeah. Like another member of the 70s revival.
In a bad way, you mean?
Again, it's kind of... I'm only getting like...
it's hard to hear.
Some snippets of it. But I remember I did like tennis, so it's not 100% opposed to it. Just 95.
Yeah. We'll see, man. I think we've got an interesting record ahead of us, for sure, at least. That'll be out in just 2 weeks. So get ready for my pick on that in a little bit. What else? How about some Foster the People, Mark? You like Foster the People?
Yeah, I like Foster the People.
Okay. I think Foster the People is just all right, man. I think the Pumped Up Kicks is killer.
Yeah.
I think that the track Houdini might even be better than Pumped Up Kicks. And that Torches on the Whole is light and fluffy, but not super important to me. I think there's some decent tracks, but also some very forgettable ones on there. They put out a second album about 3 or 4 years ago now, and that was immediately forgotten by the public at large. But again, a smattering of singles on that thing that were listenable and okay, but just as many that were forgettable. So here they come back for round number 3. This one also preceded by a 3-song EP, much like their first album. Mark Foster and gang are back at it again. This album, Sacred Hearts Club, is out now. It's been out for about a month or so, I think. And man, it's exact same story here, man. Like,
really?
Just... Yeah, but also, like, strange in a way that it's hard to describe, because this album is even more of an amalgamation of sounds than the previous work. I think the second album was a more ambitious realization of the Foster the People upbeat, up-tempo, sunny California, Beach Boys meets modern pop indie soundscape. This has got a lot more influence from hip-hop beats, and it's more experimental in a way that doesn't work. It's confusing in a lot of places. I'm maybe going to pick a couple tracks here just to showcase some of that stuff. So this one, like I mentioned, had a 3-song EP that came out in advance of the album. The first track, Pay the Man, was on it. We'll play a little bit from Pay the Man here. What you need, yeah, what you see, yeah. Oh, no, well, I need a little something. So we've got some like weird rap sample beat thing happening here, which is totally different from anything that they have done previously, and is not pleasing to the ear to listen to, at least for me. Yeah. And then the rest of the song is also different. Okay, so there's that one. Then we've also got some more positive tracks that I think tend to lean more to their previous stuff, like Sit Next to Me. I'll pull the chorus to this one. These guys have always been compared to MGMT, and I think that track, they definitely lean more into their MGMT tendencies, but it's pretty enjoyable and more emblematic of their previous sound. But there are just some weird choices on this thing, man. Like, they're really all over the place. Every track sounds different from the previous one. Very few moments where they recall their previous sound. Some interlude tracks that are less than a minute or so long, interspersed throughout as well. There is a duet with a female vocalist that is kind of 60s love inspired, called Static Space Lover. Okay. There's a horrible track on here called Loyal Like Sid and Nancy. It's real. It's all over the place, man. It's really tough to pin down, and there are moments that I like it and moments that I hate it, and there's a lot of moments in between that I just feel nothing about. So again, third time was not the charm for Foster the People. They continue to turn out albums that I find are maybe contain one or two solid tracks, but are ultimately forgettable inside of that. I don't see how these guys are that definitive of a voice inside the indie scene.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I don't know, man. Maybe you'll find it more interesting than I did, but I found it really flat. Or not, I guess not flat, but...
bizarre?
Yeah. The opposite of flat. It's all over the place, but in a bad way.
Right, no, I get that. But quality-wise, we're talking a flat plane of quality here.
Flat plane of quality. It's a 5-star. It's my favorite album of the year so far.
Nice!
Yeah, I was trying to get through Passion Pit's latest album also, which is called A Tremendous Sea of Love, but I didn't quite get enough listens through it, so check back with me next week. I'll give you the full thoughts on that.
Okay, that's actually on my list too.
All right, so you should listen to it too, and we'll talk about it then.
Great.
All right, what else you got, Mark?
What do I got? I only have a few things here. I've slowed my pace a little bit. So I listened to Fake Sugar by a musician named Beth Ditto, which is a kind of straightforward, straight ahead rock pop kind of album. There are some danceable tracks on here. I find that as an artist, Beth Ditto is maybe a little plain faced in her music, and when she gets good within the lines, you know, very on the tracks of the stuff that's around her. there is a sort of more poppy song on Fake Sugar that I like called Savoir Faire. I'll just play a quick clip of that. It's all right. I don't care. Call it style. A love affair. Head in the clouds. Nose in the air. Good for you. And your savoir faire.
That sounds like good Foster the People music.
Yeah, that's actually a really great way to describe it too. Maybe that's why I'm not so hot on it, is that it just, it's like, yeah, that's like, that's well written. There's nothing necessarily surprising or,
yeah,
I don't know. It kind of feels like imitation almost at a certain point. But it was an okay album. It was fine. I listened to Motor City by J Dilla,
okay,
which is an entirely instrumental album in which every track is just a number. Which are essentially all just instrumental hip hop beats, one after another.
Nice.
That sound a whole lot like this.
Mm. Yeah. Come on. Yeah.
Oh, are you about to rap over this? Please rap over this.
Wait my whole life for this. Yeah. I've been running. And they still ain't got me now.
Hey, no one kissed Charlie.
Nope.
I gotta say, that was a disappointing rap debut from you.
That's my intro track.
Just you going, ha, ha.
Yeah.
That was a very good interpretation of the laugh from the Gorillaz album this year. Well, I had to listen to that clip so many times to make that stupid break thing. So I listened to this almost entirely. No, actually completely entirely while playing the game For Honor, which is a multiplayer close combat game where like knights and Vikings and samurai all fight each other.
The brawler.
I turned it all on mute and played it that way. And just now keep that image in mind of a knight fighting a samurai and then hear this again.
Yeah.
I feel like you got a rap song.
My sword is sharp, but your armor is weak. And I'm going to take this blade and bust it right through your knee. Because I'm coming down the bridge, going to kill your son. I'm going to burn this place. I ain't got no gun. I'm from the 18th century with no gunpowder. That's why I'm over here eating your chowder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Samurai.
Did we run out of steam?
No, that's the intro track.
Wow, that was a really good debut. You finally did it.
That was the intro track. Thank you.
Time traveling man.
I'm Samurai. I'm a rapper named Samurai because I'm literally a samurai that's time traveled from the past to come to the present.
Maybe you were like an outcast because you were rapping back before rap was there.
I invented this rap game, man. Literally.
And now you're here to prove everyone where it really started. Feudal.
No, I started this, guys. I'm telling you, I started it.
And mainly it seems like what your thing was is you don't set places on fire. Is that right?
Right. I've got no gun. I have only my sword.
Is that just what you do? You just clarify what you do and don't have on you at any given moment? You run around
it's
and do that?
It's important to state that, right? When I'm going through airport security, it's important to let them know that I don't have any guns.
Yeah. You're basically Parappa the Rapper. Like you go through everyday activities by rapping.
Isn't that what every rapper does?
Oh, if only if that were true.
I mean, I invented this rap game, so.
I don't think people who are in the rap game, though, like they're mostly very successful. Like, they don't have to do what you do.
Yeah, well. All right. That was cool.
Yeah.
How's For Honor treating you? Is it good?
How was what treating me?
For Honor. Is it good?
Oh, yeah, it's good. It's kind of buggy. Still, somehow, and the
single player. Still, man, it's been like 6 months.
Yeah, I don't know if it was because it was a free weekend, which is how I could play it. So maybe they were just like really loaded with people. Like there was like a ton of people who were all level zero every time I played. So maybe there were just too many people for things to actually work. But it kind of soured me on the game. Mechanically, I thought it was pretty sound though.
Cool. Sounds good.
And Motor City also I enjoyed, but not a ton. It was okay. And lastly, I listened to the new 2 Chainz record.
Beautiful 2 Chainz girls.
Right. Pretty girls like trap music.
Yeah, that's the one.
I mean, kind of the same. I think 2 Chainz is like a super, super consistent trap artist. You know, you can maybe send a criticism his way that maybe he's not inventive and he just kind of sticks with the same safe sort of trap beats. But yeah. Every time I throw on a 2 Chainz track, I tend to have a good time. And this thing is kind of long. It doesn't say a lot of important stuff. Like there's not a lot of boundary pushing, in terms of message or music, but it's just good. I happen to prefer the track 4 AM, which features Travis Scott, cause I am a kind of a Travis Scott fan. But you know, more 2 Chainz, so nothing really to report there. That's pretty much it for me.
All right. And I guess that's it.
Yeah. We got to come down to our decision for next week here.
Yeah, you got to be the voice of reason on this one, Mark. Pick something good for us.
Okay. I have a few things that I have 3 albums that I think would make for an excellent conversation.
Okay. Let's do it like the Newlywed Game.
How does this work?
Who's behind door number 1?
Okay, well, behind door number one is Kesha.
Ooh, yeah, that's the, what's it called, Rainbow?
Yes.
Yeah, the comeback album.
Yes. Yes.
Are you a fan of Kesha?
I know so little about Kesha that I'm embarrassed to go outside.
Okay, so maybe we could do a revisit there.
I just know her personal journey. I know this is an album that tarches a lot of that.
And tarches a lot of paper.
Yeah, I agree. It's emotional.
Yeah, and I think it's worth checking out as a result.
Door number two.
Door number two. This is technically an EP, I think, or maybe just a very short album. I think it's an EP. This is going to be a hard sell, but I think it would make for a really fascinating conversation. Come Over When You're Sober by Lil Peep. Finally, he has something that's not just a single that he released on YouTube. He has put out a real, honest-to-God thing that you could buy, I imagine, physically somewhere, at least I would assume. It's 23 minutes, so it's pretty short. It's got some of the, I think two or three on here are singles that were released already, but it's his first like statement that he has released. And I'm kind of curious to see what that guy's deal is on a big scale.
Okay.
All right. So this is the last one. It's the wild card, maybe. Okay. It's a band called Public Service Broadcasting, an album called Every Valley. They are a sort of indie art rock kind of band from England. And this is a concept album that traces the rise and fall of the coal industry in England from the perspective of the people who built their lives around it. I found this by Spotify. Spotify suggested this album to me, and I was like, you know what, Spotify, I won't ignore you for a day. Let's see what you got.
Was it right after you've been listening to A Black Mile to the Surface?
No, this was a while ago.
Okay, because it seems like those two thematically might have some overlap.
That's true. And one of the songs on here features the lead singer from Camera Obscura on the song Progress, which is a very good song. I'm curious to see. I think that like socially, that's a really interesting thing to make an album about. I don't know culturally or politically how different the coal industry is from America. I can't imagine a indie rock album being made about that over here, considering what the political climate looks like. But I'm curious, maybe jumping off of what we just talked about today, if there's something to excavate there. So those are your three options. What do you think? I'd be happy discussing any of the three.
You mentioned that Lil Peep is pretty short.
23 minutes.
I feel like if we're going to do Lil Peep, we should do something else along with it.
Yeah, you want to try to do a twofer?
Let's do Lil Peep and something else.
Okay, it's your call.
So we can either go all in and bring in some Kesha and lean into the, I don't know, the grungier side of pop.
Right.
Or we could maybe balance it out with a little bit more of that British politeness, that stereotypical British politeness.
So let me ask you, just based on the little that you know of both, I mean, I guess you know more about Kesha, but what you know about both albums, what do you think would make more for an interesting conversation?
My thought is I'm looking at this thing as far as like year-long projects. Like, what are the albums I want to listen before the year is out? And I want to listen to that Kesha album. That's the one that's maybe
that's
most
fair,
interesting to me.
But this being my choice, I would. Yeah. That's the guideline that I'm setting forth for you. So you think the Kesha would be the more interesting conversation?
I think potentially it could be. I think we've got maybe some stuff to talk about there with her legal battles, and I think that she's going for a more stripped-down, more vocal performance-y record here than just a straight album full of bangers.
True.
It's
got Eagles of Decimal feature.
Yeah. It could be something interesting. I hear Dolly Parton's on the record, too.
I'm seeing that now. Yes, also true. And the Dap Kings.
Wow.
All right. Well, there you go. I'm sold. Kesha and Lil Peep. It's going to be an interesting combo.
I might listen to that third album if I get a chance, too, just to put it some context in. So,
okay.
We might have a threefer ahead of us.
Great. I think you also suggested we listen to something else for next week. Passion Pit.
Passion Pit. Yeah. If you get around to it. But, I mean, it'll still be there, right?
Yeah.
All right. And the week after that is Queens of the Stone Age. I'm reserving it now. So, get ready for that.
I am ready for that. I'm interested in talking to you about it.
Cool. Okay. Let's go to the Billboard. Let's see how the Billboard's shaking down.
Oh, good.
The summer song has been determined, Mark. The song of the summer, I think, has been declared unanimously. It is Despacito. I think there's no more disputing that. Despacito reigns supreme over summer 2017. So it is still at number one, followed by Wild Thoughts, then Unforgettable, then Believer, then Attention, then There's Nothing Holding Me Back, and then That's What I Like. We're going all the way down again to number eight this week for a track called Bodak Yellow, Money Moves by Cardi B.
Cardi B?
Cardi B. Like Cardi, and then the letter B.
Okay. Great.
I never heard of this person. What that is. And the artist profile on the Billboard picture is a person that is the shoulders to the ankles. There's no indication of the face on this person. So it is posed in a way that appears to be a woman, but it may be a man. I have no idea.
Okay, great. As long as I'm not back with that guy that we were talking about earlier, I am delighted. I'm delighted to jump anywhere else than there. So
no chance.
Perfect.
We're in uncharted territories next week.
Great.
All right. So let's do next week. We'll do Cardi B. We'll do Kesha. We'll do some Lil Peep and maybe some other stuff if we get the chance. It's going to be a crazy, hectic, packed episode. But that's what happens whenever you realize that 2 weeks from now is September. And then the end of the year really starts accelerating here. Before we know it, it'll be LCD Sound System and all kinds of new stuff.
LCD Sound System releases a new track tomorrow.
Oh, high drama.
Yeah. I can't remember what it's called, but I'm sure it's going to be pretty good.
Is it Call the American Dream?
No, that one already came out.
No, is this one called Call the American Dream?
I don't like this joke.
Okay. Well, that'll be it for us here this week. Why don't you subscribe to us on the iTunes or whatever you get your podcast?
Oh, wait. Before you do that, I want to give you some theme music to really like hype up this outro. Ready?
All right. Yeah.
Go for it. Hit it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We on that social media. You got to find us, man. We posting episodes out there for you to listen to. So show us love, man. Give us a 5-star rating. Do your duty to your podcast. We sure do appreciate it. Everything you do. Keep it weekly. Keep it beats. Right here, man. Right here. Right here. Right here. Right here.
Boom.
Play that outro music.